Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Fun Man About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Available on Stitcher, iTunes, and archived right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We have a couple announcements just before we jump into this show. Among them are...
We are going to GABF for the first time as Fement About It this year. It'll actually be my first time ever. So we're really excited about that. Next week, Monday, 7 p.m., we will have our GABF pre-show. We're going to have an expert on how to navigate the floor and surrounding events of GABF. We'll also probably have a brewer or two on.
And immediately preceding that show and, preceding our visit to out there, here in town is the Brooklyn Pour, put on by Village Voice, a nice, great, big festival put on by the people behind the Village Voice, about 125 different beers. I believe there are still tickets available. If you go to villagevoice.com, you can find out more information about that. And we just had a really great event, so thanks to everybody who came to the New York City Brewers Guild fundraiser. Super psyched that it worked out. We actually had a fundraiser that raised funds, and there were a bunch of really great beers from New York City. It was really neat to have a pop-up bar with all the brewers of New York City in one roof, except there was only half people had roof on them.
It was, part of it was outdoors. It was adjacent to Kelso, Greenpoint
Beer Works.
Works in Fort Greene, Brooklyn. So half of it was outside, half of it was inside. Luckily, it was an absolutely gorgeous day. And the caliber of beers that were pouring there, they were all New York City, members of the New York City Brewers Guild. It was super cool and inspirational, and I was really happy that I got to go.
Speaking of fundraising, I would be remiss not to mention this. I know that not, a lot of our listeners are not necessarily in New York City, but on November 2nd, we are going to have a celebration of the homebrewing community in New York City with all the clubs kind of under one roof that will benefit a charity of yet to be decided. Actually, we're all voting together throughout all the clubs and the homebrew stores to figure out what that's going to be, but that's going to be at the Bell House. You can find out more about that at brunity.com. Well, not just yet, but stay tuned to it. We need to update that, but you'll find out more about that. But what's today about, Mary?
All right, so today we have our friends Benjamin and Danielle from Brooklyn Homebrew, proprietors of Brooklyn Homebrew, and we're going to start. Let's start by talking about the wart, the Brooklyn wart that's coming
Hi.
Up.
The Brooklyn
yes.
wart.
Yes. Hi. Welcome.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. We haven't had you on since last year, I think.
So. Yeah, I think it's been about a year.
But you're a repeat offenders here.
We are
from
repeat offenders. Yeah.
This is the
I think we were
sixth.
One of your first shows. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is going to be the sixth time we're doing the competition. So I feel like we're seasoned. We kind of got it down. We know what we're doing.
The competition being Brooklyn Wort.
So we'll have 30 homebrewers that have already been through a preliminary round of judging. We pick the top 30 from that preliminary round. And then the 30 compete against each other on October 12th. It's going to be held at the new Threes Brewery in Gowanus. Tickets right now are $45. They're halfway sold out, so probably not going to be around much longer. But the event runs from 1 to 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. We'll see how the crowd is. But, yeah, it should be a really good time. So it'll be our first time ever at a brewery.
That's
so.
Very
yeah,
exciting.
That's very cool. So how many entrants did you guys have? So talk a little bit about how many entrants you had and how you guys chose, pre-selected.
So this time around we had about 55, I believe. And then the way we boiled it down is we just got, I think, about 10 people judging in pairs, and they're just friends from the brewing industry, essentially. Some of them are Cicerone, some of them are BJCP judges, It was kind of who was available to help us that day. So,
and what are you looking for in a beer for exhibiting at Brooklyn Wort or for competing in
anything,
Brooklyn Wort?
Anything that stands out. Nothing is... There's no style guidelines. It doesn't have to be a super crazy beer. I mean, the beers that have won in the past have been like as simple as just a brown ale because it was a perfect brown ale. Like, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, just really good execution.
Just really good executed beers. Yeah, things that will impress you.
And so you've vetted these beers, but those entry beers are the beers that you vetted, or the preliminary round.
Yep.
Are those the same beers that are going to end up on the floor?
Nope. So brewers can brew whatever they want for the actual day of the competition. Some people will stick to what they brewed, but most people will change it up and brew something else.
So what they're proving is that they are good brewers.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So these are people that are usually, they're brewing a lot. A lot of them are repeat competitors. A few people that are in the competition have won before and have gotten in again.
That being said, though, the judging is blind.
It's all
anonymous.
Blind. Yep.
And it's just, you know, it's always nice to see new faces, new people competing, but then there's a few people who, no matter what, they
always
manage
get in.
To get in there. They're just consistently brewing awesome beer.
Yeah, so.
I can imagine. We've had some of them on our show.
Yeah,
definitely.
Recently.
Yeah.
Jason Saylor.
Jason Saylor.
Now, the cool thing about Brooklyn Wort is that it's not a BJCP, AHA, competition. It's a competition that the public get to come.
Exactly.
So the beers are judged by professional and press, like I'll be one of the judges, as well as there's a public choice. And you guys have a decent amount of prize money and other prizes involved, which I think is great.
So it's $1,000 total that we give away to the first place people's choice and first place judges' choice. And then besides that, there's other prizes. Like the first place judges' choice is going to get to brew a beer at Three's Brewery and have an event with that beer that they're going to brew. And then the first place people's choice is going to get to sort of stage and hang out for a day at Three's Brewing and help brew with Greg Dorosky. The brewer at Three's Brewing.
And it's worth noting that Greg, I think, won the first
Greg
ever
won the very
Brooklyn
first
Wort.
Brooklyn Wort.
Oh, really?
Then
yeah.
he went on
That's
to brew awesome. Assistant brewing
at Greenport.
At Greenport Harbor, yeah.
Started making the beer commercially that he won the first Brooklyn Wort with.
Yep.
And now he's...
Wow.
It's all
what,
come full circle.
What beer was that?
The Spring Turning Rye.
The Spring Turning Rye.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's what he won the very first competition with. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that... I mean, I think that the AHAB, JCP homebrew competitions obviously serve a purpose. But
definitely.
I think the kind of competition that Brooklyn Wort is also, you know, serves just as important of a purpose for both homebrewers and the community because...
It just lets people have fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's just brew whatever you want. Brew something that you dreamt about last night.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just brew whatever you want. Maybe it's awesome. Maybe it's not, you know.
It's a cage match.
It's kind of a cage match, you know. A lot of the guys are pretty competitive with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's fun. And I think the people that are there have fun. And the brewers also have a lot of fun. So
yeah, and if you are in the New York City area... And you want to go to this, get your tickets now, because like Danielle said, half are sold out, I'm sure.
Yeah, you can go to brooklynwort.com. You can buy tickets on there. With your ticket, you also get a tasting glass that you get to take home. You'll get lunch, Solbert pupusas. They're going to be our food for the event.
Because you get a food ticket, you just turn that in,
right? You get a food ticket, you just turn it in. You'll get to taste all 30 beers and place your vote, and it's a good time. It's a very good time.
Awesome.
And you'll get to see a brewery before it's actually open.
Yeah.
Because they are not going to be open yet.
Yeah, which is
not
pretty
pouring.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about what we're drinking.
Sure.
Lots of stuff.
Yes.
Always.
So we have these special little glasses, which remind me more of like... I feel like I would be
shot
drinking,
glasses.
Yeah, from Turkey. Turkey.
Yeah,
actually.
I think that's what they are.
That are. What is that drink we drank in Turkey? That's licorice anise flavored, fennel licorice anise flavored.
Not ouzo. It's
Rizaki.
Rocca.
Oh, yes, yeah. That somehow makes me.
I think they're more closely related to that.
Yeah. But we're actually drinking a sake.
Homebrewed sake. Only the second time I've ever attempted it, but. If you're thinking about brewing your own sake at home, it's much easier to make a gallon than it is to make 5 gallons.
Why?
Just the sheer amount of rice you need to be able to steam cook and cool. And I thought it would be a piece of cake. You know, I love beer. I brew beer more than anything else. But I like trying new things and branching out. And the amount of rice solids that are involved, I basically had to use 2 10-gallon fermenters to make like 6 gallons or so of sake in the end.
Wow. And what kind of...
I realize in retrospect there were a couple things I could have tweaked and done better, but it's just a lot of rice salads that end up getting sort of strained out through a filter or cheesecloth.
25 pounds to be exact.
That was a 6-gallon batch?
Yep.
So what kind of equipment did you use for your 1-gallon batch? Or did you make...
Essentially the same. I just had a lot more extra space, you know. So I just had to double everything, you know.
So let's go back to the process of making sake real quick. Basic egg.
Well, I was not able to acquire the nice, high-quality polished rice, but as you can see, you can still make an okay sake without it.
Absolutely.
But next time I want to go the extra mile and get the good rice. But you need a good quality rice that you can... You need to wash it, soak it, steam cook it so that it's very al dente. You don't really want it cooked necessarily as tender as you would if you were going to just eat a bowl of rice. You cool it, inoculate it with the kojikin mold, essentially, mold spore. Keep it warm and moist for a day or two, which lets the mold take over, and that's essentially your starter rice. It's that mold, it acts as the enzyme, provides the enzymes to malt the rest of the rice. So after you've created that starter rice, then you steam cook more rice, cool it, combine it with the moldy koji starter rice, add water, yeast, and you can use hops, you can use lactic acid, or you can actually do a lactic acid fermentation just to lower the pH and discourage other bacteria's growing in there. Mm-hmm. And the enzyme in that mold spore is, I believe it's a gamma amylase, which actually likes a really low pH and a lower temperature. And that's sort of the key, because it only creates a little bit of glucose sugar slowly so that the yeast isn't overwhelmed right off the bat. It just gives a little bit of sugar every day to the yeast. So that's why you can even take a low alcohol tolerance lager yeast and still get up to like 20% alcohol, because it's just feeding it very slowly.
Very slowly.
Yeah.
In this one, you use hops.
Yep. I use Citra hops, and you know, you're not really supposed to taste them or smell them. It can contribute a little bit of color to the finished product. But being a beer maker, I couldn't help but just throw a little more in there than I probably should have, but I'm still happy with it.
Yeah, I think it's delicious, because as we were coming, we're like, this is really good, although I don't know that I would pet, like, if somebody gave this to me in an absolute blind tasting, I don't know that I would peg it as sake, because it has, like, this very grape, juicy fruit kind of aroma, and that's definitely from the citrus, but I love it. I think it's fantastic.
Thank you. I think
that the only reason hops haven't been used in sake is because they didn't know about them.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, I could be wrong, but I've read that it's not, I didn't make this up. There are other examples of it. I don't know if it's used on a large scale in production, but there's some historical relevance there. Or, I'm not the first. I know that.
Yeah.
I just came from a room of Citra hops in Yakima, Washington.
Oh, yeah, I saw those pictures, video.
It was pretty incredible to be out there on the hop farms and experiencing it, you know, firsthand. And yeah, I have lots to think about all that stuff. I'm in a big hop appreciation mode and totally inspired.
Do tell.
It was a very large room.
Yes, it was a very large room. Like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of hops behind me. Just like wanted to be Scrooge McDuck and swim through them all. But it was amazing to be around. They were harvesting Simcoe and Citra while I was there. It was awesome to find out, you know, how they choose to plant hops. I mean, everything has to be contracted. So do you guys contract as a homebrew store?
No, we're not allowed to contract.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
But the people you buy from
There's one company that's contacted us about contracting, but you have to contract 3 years out, and you have to put down a pretty big piece of money for just one hop to contract.
Right.
And it's just kind of not really something we could afford as like a small, just
Mom
retail business.
Shop.
Yeah. I mean, we do buy in bulk, but we can't contract. Yeah.
Do you find that you are ever short of particular varieties, or is it never ever unavailable to you guys as homebrewers?
Sometimes. I would say, I don't know. I feel like the last, like, maybe 2 years, it hasn't been quite as bad as it has in the past. I think the only things that have, like, really run out are Centennial has been a popular one that runs out lately.
And that was a bad Citra. Year for Centennial,
well,
too,
so we'll
apparently.
Maybe it'll run out again. Yeah. Citra and maybe Amarillo is probably the other one. But, you know, for the most part, like, Cascade is always super plentiful. Like, there's always plenty of that. Mm-hmm. You know, who cares? Just use Cascade for everything.
See, it's different for me. I can't actually get Cascade
you
on
can't
spot
get
right
Cascade.
Now. Not currently. I mean, thankfully, I'm a small tuberous system, so I can go to you guys. And be like, hey, can you help me out
with something? Happy to be your dealer.
Thank you.
So I want to ask, before we go to break, you guys have some new fall kits out at your store.
We do, yeah. Yeah. So every time this year, we always get bombarded with pumpkin ale kits. It kills us. And we, yeah, so we wanted to switch it up this year a little bit. So we're selling a tart cherry porter kit this year, which we're actually, we started selling these little tiny jars of King Orchard tart cherry. Concentrate.
Cherries,
it's from it's Montmorency cherries from Michigan. It's the same stuff that Bell's uses and Founders uses at their brewery. We're just getting them in little tiny 16-ounce jars and one bottle and a beer, and
it's delicious.
It's freaking delicious. So we're selling a tart cherry porter right now. The pumpkin ale kit, of course. And I don't know, what else are we
Imperial maple
ale. We have an Imperial maple ale that we sell right now, but it's almost always pumpkin ale.
That's what everybody wants.
Going back to the cherry, I just used cherries for the first time. I got some cherries. When do you guys, in that kit, when do you instruct to put that cherry juice in?
We
in
add them, I think, 7 days into fermentation.
Mm-hmm. Sort of when the Krausen's falling a little bit. And
So you retain more aroma that way?
I think that's, and it's kind of you know, rouses it again, helps dry it out, finish it a little bit.
Yeah. It's kind of always a trade-off homebrewing to choose between the best method and what you're capable of doing.
Yeah.
If you have a secondary fermenter, I would try adding it then too, but a lot of people don't when they're first starting out, so there's nothing wrong with adding it nice and late in the primary.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool. And on that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more from Ben and Danielle from Brooklyn Homebrew.
Ferment about it.
Like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, greatbrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. Greatbrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, greatbrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit greatbrewers.com today.
We're thrilled to announce a special event, the Silver Snail 25 Years of Slow Food. This event is hosted by Slow Food USA, Heritage Radio Network, and Roberta's Pizza. It's been 25 years since Carlo Petrini and a group of activists launched a peaceful revolution to defend regional traditions, good food, gastronomic pleasure, and the slow pace of life. The slow food movement has since evolved into a comprehensive approach to food that recognizes strong connections between plate, planet, people, politics, and culture. Today, this movement involves thousands of projects and millions of people in more than 160 countries worldwide. Join us for a dialogue between Slow Food's founder, Carlo Petrini, and locavore activist, Alice Waters, as they reflect on the evolution of the food movement and all things slow. Friday, October 3rd from 11:30 to 2:30. You can go to our website and click on the link on the right-hand side of the page to RSVP. We can't wait to see you there.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're here in the studio with Benjamin and Danielle of Brooklyn Homebrew, one of the first homebrew stores to show up in New York City since, 2000?
2009 is when
since the dark ages.
Since the dark ages, when we used to have to travel far and order only online.
So you guys just poured us a peanut butter and jelly short mead.
Peanut butter and jelly short mead, inspired by Mary Izette because she is the fabulous alternative fermenter. but yeah, after hanging out at your house and tasting some of your treats, I was inspired to just try to do something crazy, and peanut butter and jelly mead just sounded crazy enough.
And it worked perfectly. I mean, this is like drinking a peanut, like a really good quality peanut butter and jelly
sandwich.
It's
really not bad. Yeah, it's super easy to make. I think it took like 4 or 5 days. I threw it into bottles, but it's got, I think it's a core, it's 1 gallon. I just did 1 gallon of it. It's just wildflower, honey, a quarter cup of peanut butter, a quarter cup of whatever jam or jelly. I used homemade blueberry jelly. And that's it, and let it ferment for a few days.
The nose on it is awesome.
It's pretty crazy.
It's very, it's peanut butter. It's aptly named. You know, this is an amazing beverage. And so, how much honey per gallon?
I just did 1 pound.
1 pound.
1 pound of honey, quarter cup of jelly, quarter cup of peanut butter.
Dude, so good.
There's even a little bit of like breadiness.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Crust too. Yeah, it's almost like a whole wheat peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And it has head. I mean, the head disappears when you pour it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is actually head in the bottle still, which I'm surprised.
I was too. I like was worried about the fat in the peanut butter. I tried to attempt a few different ways to remove the fat as much as I could. A few ways were just, I tried putting it into ice cold water and freezing it just slightly just to see if the fat would rise out.
Yeah.
You know, I got a little bit of the fat out, but there was still a lot of it left. It's just so emulsified into it. And I was just like, whatever, we're just going to go. This is going to be a full-on experiment.
Maybe warm water, like puree it with that and then
maybe
put it in the freezer.
Hard to say.
Because PB2 you can use, but it's way more expensive than regular peanut butter.
Yeah.
And then I've used peanut shells. Mm-hmm. And I think peanut shells give you a really nice aroma.
Nice.
Yeah.
But
they need time.
Yeah, they need a little more time because they taste weird at first. I don't know how to describe it. He liked it.
I loved it, yeah.
But I thought it was really weird. And then a couple days later...
I'm the guy that eats his peanuts without shelling them, though. I eat the peanut
shells.
You
eat the actual peanut shells?
I go in.
Holy crap.
That's impressive.
That's pretty impressive.
Stuff.
You're
like
people that eat
dirt,
sunflower seeds and they eat the outsides. I never got that.
I like that.
I don't do it all the time. I mean, like, so if I have one bag of peanuts, I'd probably eat half of them with the shell on and half with off. It's a lot of fiber.
I always imagine the outside just tastes like
straw. If you ever served me peanuts, that's how to do it. But have you guys used that PB2?
I have not personally. No, I've tasted beers with it in it, and yeah, it makes beers taste like peanut butter. But you know, it's really expensive, so it's like,
yeah,
you know.
That's for sure.
But this was proof that, like, oh yeah, I could pour peanut butter into my fermenter, and it's totally fine. I don't know about beer; that's a totally different world. But
yeah.
I'd be tempted to try it sometime just to see.
It dances with this honey in an amazing way.
Yeah.
And homemade blueberry jam. So have you been making homemade blueberry?
I've been making jam since I was probably like a little kid.
Yeah.
but I whenever I have fruit that's either just not going bad or going bad.
Or you have too much.
Or too much. I almost always just turn it into jam. Even if I'm just like gifting it to somebody or, you know, or it just preserves it longer, you know.
All right, so you brought something else,
I
just poured for myself.
I did.
Sweet potato fly.
I brought some sweet potato fly, also inspired by you.
This is also
what
delicious.
Is sweet potato fly?
So sweet potato fly. This is the first time I've ever made it. So it's just shredded sweet potato, eggshells.
Cooked or
that part's
not cooked. Okay.
Not cooked sweet potato, shredded.
So why the eggshells?
They put the eggshells in, I guess, to help keep acidity low. So the acid doesn't go like wild.
So pH.
It helps
high?
With the pH, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Keep it
keeps
high.
pH high.
It also adds some nutrients, I think.
I think it probably adds a little bit of nutrients. So it's got sugar, it's got the shredded sweet potato, water, spices, and the eggshell. And that's pretty much it. And let it go for
spices.
3 days
secret.
On the dot. Well, the spices were just, it's clove, cinnamon,
pumpkin what
spice.
Kind of,
nutmeg.
What did you add a commercial yeast or?
Nope, natural. Aha. Totally natural. Let it go for 3 days. It was done, bottled it. That's it. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way either.
I think it's really good.
Yeah.
So this is, I actually haven't made sweet potato fly. It's been on my list to make. I've had it at some other fermentation gatherings. This is way better than anything I've
ever
had.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Must be my clean sanitation practices or something.
Well, also, I've had one before that was like kind of a little thick. Tapache.
How did you sanitize your eggshells?
Underwater. No, but I used Star Sand to clean all my equipment and all that. So yeah,
I think, I mean, this is definitely it has a lactic quality, yeah. But it's like a very clean, mm-hmm. like there's no food, you know, stinky feet or other unpleasant.
Yeah, so I only let it go for 3 days and then bottled it.
And I like the spices too.
Yeah, it's a good, it's really, it's kind of clovey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And definitely cinnamon, right?
Cinnamon, yeah.
It's got a lot of body to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it finishes crisp.
But not too much.
Yeah, it's not cloyingly sweet. Like, and that it's like
carbonated it. I'm not sure if you're actually supposed to carbonate it, but I thought it might be better carbonated. Yeah. So,
did you carbonate it in a keg or
no? Just in those bottles
with the drops, or
no? Just in those bottles, and I sprinkled, sprinkled a little bit of sugar in, and that's it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you know the history on sweet potato fly or how?
I have no idea. I'm hoping Mary would.
I don't.
We're looking at you, Mary. Come
on, I was just reading about it, but I don't know the history.
I was arguing that it needs a new name because it sounds like an invasive species that lays eggs in sweet potatoes and destroys crops or something. A sweet potato fly.
That's true.
Like sweet potato wine. It sounds more delicious.
Yeah. Have you done any other fermentations where you've gotten where you used potato? Have you made a potato Berliner Weiss?
Never. That's my first time. Well, I mean, other than like I brought some lacto fermented carrots too, like carrot, but that's the only other that's sort of a root vegetable, right?
Yeah. Stephen Durley and Haley.
Oh, they did the potato Berliner Weiss.
Yes, they have the one they made, and that was really good. That's my only experience
today. We might see them soon.
I mean, I think you can, that's a whole thing. You can ferment anything that has sugar. And if it doesn't have that much sugar, you can just add sugar. What kind of sugar did you use in this?
Just regular organic sugar.
Like organic white sugar?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty simple.
So what else are you guys brewing for fall?
What are we doing? Early, I'm going to try to do a graph on Wednesday, which is the first time I've ever attempted anything in that. So it's just, I'm going to do it a little bit differently. So graphs are... Graph, G-R-A-F, I believe.
Sometimes with two.
Sometimes with two is a fictional beverage created by Stephen King, for anyone who doesn't know that.
Was it Stephen King?
Really?
Or Tolkien?
I heard it was Stephen King.
I heard it was old school. I heard it was like Tolkien-ish kind of.
You're going to start an argument online about this.
But it's essentially a cider that is, you add malt to the cider to just add body and a little bit of residual sweetness. I'm kind of going to switch it up a little bit and make it more like a beer that has cider. So I'm going to try to do just like a nice wheat beer base with some English crystal malt, so you kind of get that biscuit cinnamon thing going on. And then it's probably going to be a 3-gallon batch, and then I'm going to top it off with 2 gallons of cider and just ferment it with a wheat beer yeast. And
so you're
going to
add the apple juice at the end?
Yep.
At the end of what?
Well,
at the
once you transfer?
Before fermentation.
Before fermentation, gotcha. Yeah, we'll see. It's kind of a big experiment. I have no idea what it's going to taste like.
I did something similar to that. Like, one-third of it was from cider, apple juice, but I added that, just like you guys talked about doing the cherry juice. Mm-hmm. You know, I added the apple juice 7 days into fermentation of a regular American ale. I thought it was very nice.
Was it?
Yeah.
See, I always, like, I'm a little, like, worried. I'm like, apple and beer, I don't know. Like, are people going to despise that? Or
just
is it,
tell
like,
them it's graph.
Yeah.
It's not
just
beer,
don't
it's
say
graph.
Beer at all. I mean, it seems like it'd be delicious.
Well, I mean, it makes sense because people put honey in their beer or lots of other stuff.
Like, why not
sugar,
do apples?
Grapes, you know, grapes.
Rocky
kind of
Mountain
grape
oysters.
Yeah.
Yes, they do that. Yes.
That beer is delicious, too, by the way.
Brady, I'm going to keep this PC. There's so much I want to say right now.
What else are you brewing for fall? What else are people who come in the
Fest
store?
That's
going
to be ready probably mid-October,
sweet.
Which is a little too late, but better late than never.
I don't know. I think it's okay to drink October. I mean, I know, yeah. I guess Oktoberfest actually start in September. Mm-hmm. But
triple
no
decoction.
Reason.
Did it the hard way. Should be good.
What is your homebrew setup like? Are you guys doing it on the stove, on a gas stove? Or are you guys doing? Do you have a brew?
We do both.
We have a backyard.
Like.
Luckily,
now. We kind of mix it up though.
And then you have induction. The induction burners.
We have induction
at
the store. But we have a pretty big brew stand in our backyard.
A big steel contraption on wheels last summer. So it's got two propane burners. So there's one for the hot liquor tank and one for the boil, and sort of a two level deal. And
nice.
I love it. It was a labor of love, but I think I'm all set for a while now with that.
Do you think that any of those yield better beers than the others, or is it just knowing your system?
No, it's just knowing your system.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had to learn all over again with it, but the cleanup is easier. You know, I can store everything in place instead of hauling things in and out of the apartment, you know, indoors, outdoors. I can just store it outside under a tarp, and I can do two beers in like 7 hours, whereas before it'd be one batch in 6 hours or something. You know? So you can do two back-to-back and be set for half, you know, 2 weeks or a month and be satisfied.
Cool.
That's without sharing the beer.
Right, right. That's if it's just for me. Yeah.
I should also mention that you guys have a bunch of classes coming up.
We have so many classes. We just announced all of our fall classes. Mary's teaching one of them, actually, a mead and cider class.
Saturday, October 11th?
Saturday, October 11th. Tickets are only $35, people. $35.
So that is a bargain for
me. Is a bargain for a class.
I'd pay $35 to hang out with Mary.
We're going to talk about my favorite hop ciders.
Yeah.
That's like one of my favorite recent beverages.
I have a hop cider at home. I should have brought it with me.
So good.
From Portland.
But we have an advanced mashing class coming up, which is going to be Partagyle, it's going to be sour mashing,
that's
it's going to be decoction.
The triple decoction.
So that's kind of going to be like an all-in-one mashing class, just a
Berliner Weiss
next-level mashing, essentially. We have a sour beer class.
Jeff's very excited about that.
Jeff Lyons, who works at Dirk the Norseman now.
We had him. We actually interviewed him for the sour beer meeting at the Sour Beer Club competition at Bruisers.
And he's been working on the class for a good 6 months now. The sour beers are ready. We're going to taste at least 16 sour beers, if not more.
Including
I'm going to have to sign up for that just to come.
Giant wine
barrel.
Oh,
and including our very exclusive wine barrel that nobody else is going to get to taste that works outside of the store.
Precious. That's delicious.
What are the other classes?
I'm looking at them. You've got cheese and beer pairing?
We have a cheese and beer pairing class in December.
Intro to all grain, brewing with spices.
We've got a spice class with Vlad from the New York City Homebrewers Guild. That was a really fun class last year, and we wanted to repeat it. It's kind of a really hands-on class. It's all experiments. We just create like 8 to 10 tinctures of different spices, and we have a few base beers, and we just play with it, adding spices to each beer. Everybody gets to kind of create their own level of spice additions, and you know, just to see what spices do to beer, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's a really fun class, actually.
And then recipe design, besides your beginner's class.
And then just, the normal beginner's classes. Recipe design was just this past weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Now that I'm looking.
Missed that one.
I think you're good.
Missed it.
I think you know what you're doing.
The sour class, I used to brew a lot of sour. That sounds fun.
Yeah, the sour class is, it's halfway sold out right now. So, but we're gonna, if that one sells out, we have a second one planned a few months later.
Awesome.
So
we're gonna ration all the
We have enough for two classes,
so we can do two back to back. So
yeah, but it's gonna be kind of an intense class. So I highly recommend it to anybody really interested in sour beers.
Yeah. It's like the fire at the circus.
Yep.
Intense.
Jumping right into
Boy Scouts.
Yep.
Also intense.
Yes. And on that note, we're going to wrap it up.
Benjamin and Daniel, thank you for enjoying my jokes and joining us here.
That was really fast, actually.
And thanks for all your delicious beverages. So hopefully you guys are inspired to do some, not only some quick fermentations, but maybe delve into sake. We had another sake class with Eddie Hoskins, a couple months ago, I guess.
Yeah,
in July, I think. That was great, so I think I'm ready to jump into sake.
If you haven't heard that podcast, definitely check
out. My little current project's done. I will be jumping into sake sometime late fall.
Do it.
We better make a lot of sake before then jump into it. You'd be like Kobe beef. I'm going to be bathing you in sake and singing you melodies.
Get a swimming pool full of it.
So next week, we will be back at 7 p.m. Eastern
Standard
Time.
I did not just call you a cow,
time.
By the way.
Thanks. We're going to be back. Chris O'Leary is going to be our in-studio guest. He is an expert at navigating GABF and all the surrounding events. He's also been doing a lot of fun brewery tours all over the country. So we will have him in the studio, as well as hopefully a call-in brewer. And we're going to talk about GABF and other good stuff.
And right after that, on the 6th, our friend John LaPala is going to have Sean Torres, Hollis Smith, and Robbie Crafton here in the studio talking about spices.
In 2 weeks. So, good night and foment about it.
Foment about it.
Foment about it.
Foment about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.